Today on Between the Covers, host Dan Johnson interviews Oregon writer Christopher Lord about his book, The Edwin Drood Murders, the second volume in the Dickens Junction Mystery series that began with the Christmas Carol murders. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the hosts share their favorite books of 2013. That's all coming up, but first, it's Press Watch with host Teresa Mitchell presenting news you're not supposed to know. Yuan on the rise, fracking oil companies sue Colorado, and the Venezuela power line attack. That's all coming up next on KBOO.
Tune in to Between the Covers every Thursday at 11 a.m. to hear interviews with locally and nationally known authors from both fiction and nonfiction. Between the Covers, only on KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy billionaire rule. So much news you're not supposed to know today. I don't know where to start, so I'll just start somewhere. From KDKA, fast food workers in Pittsburgh joined in a national rally today to raise the federal minimum wage. Employees from Dunkin' Donuts, McDonald's, Wendy's, Arby's, Taco Bell, and Brugger's Bagels took part. The demonstrations are going on across the country, including in Market Square. Quoting, "We're out here to let corporate America know that we won't stand for poverty wages," end quote. That's from Marcus Scott, a Dunkin' Donuts employee. So don't go to fast food today unless you're going to support workers. The American Studies Association leadership is pushing a plan to boycott Israeli universities, saying that Palestinian students and scholars currently face severe obstructions to their right to education due to the occupation. The resolution was passed unanimously by the association's 20-member national council, composed of elected representatives from the general ASA membership. ASA President Curtis Marez said that the boycott is the best way to protect and expand academic freedom and access to education. The resolution, he said, recognizes that due to the occupation, Palestinian students and scholars currently face severe obstructions to their right to education through restrictions on movement and travel that limit their ability to attend and work at universities, travel to conferences, and to study abroad, end quote. And that's what the ASA said in a statement published on its website, noting a United Nations report which outlined how the Israeli occupation of Palestine has impacted students whose development is deformed by pervasive deprivations affecting health, education, and overall security. The ASA opted to honor the call for a boycott of Israeli universities as a means of showing solidarity with Palestinians. And that's from RT News. Now I want to talk about the climate oil industry and related issues. And I'll start with the oil industry stepping up its war on dissent. How dare you oppose the oil industry? InsideClimateNews.org reports earlier this year, TransCanada, the Canadian energy company behind the Keystone XL pipeline, briefed Nebraska law enforcement authorities on how to prosecute demonstrators protesting the 1,200-mile project. Let me just pause for a moment to consider this phenomenon of corporations briefing law enforcement on how to prosecute dissent. But returning to the article, in 2011, Range Resources and oil and gas companies hired combat veterans with experience in psychological warfare to squash opposition of natural gas drilling. Much more on that at insideclimatenews.org. And also from Russia Today, Colorado Oil and Gas Association has filed a lawsuit against the cities of Fort Collins and Lafayette, claiming that bans on fracking for oil and gas voted in by its citizens go against state laws regulating natural resources. In November, Fort Collins approved a 5-year moratorium on fracking within the city, which seems reasonable to me. How about a 500-year moratorium? While Lafayette made amendments to its city charter, the article says, making hydraulic fracturing for oil and gas illegal. But the Colorado Oil and Gas Association, the people with the money, said that the bans are illicit, as the Colorado Supreme Court earlier ruled that fracking can't be banned, with state law preempting any local regulations. So back and forth they go, and how it comes out, the people with the money know. This from Radio Havana. A large electric outage that occurred in Venezuela this week has been interpreted by the Bolivarian government as another action by the U.S.-sponsored opposition to destabilize the country in the face of upcoming municipal elections. Bolivarian leader Hugo Chavez was the target of attacks by U.S.-sponsored Venezuelan opposition, and now it is President Nicolas Maduro, who, determined to keep implementing the legacy of Chavez, is fighting against the destabilizing attempts of the opposition. By the way, you'll find articles putting down Maduro, even in Canadian press. And there's not much substance to it. Maduro isn't Chavez, and he says so, said so from the start. He doesn't have that Elan Vital, but he is determined to push forward with modernization against capitalism. And returning to the article from Radio Havana, Maduro said the huge blackout was unusual and that it was most likely an opposition conspiracy to stoke up public discontent against the government before the December 8th national municipal elections. Asking Venezuelans to remain calm, the electric energy minister, Jesse Chacon, explained that the cause of the odd blackout was a detached electrical cable in one of the power towers that served the national grid. As reported Tuesday on Radio Havana, Cuba, Chacon said that the action was visibly intentional, and he noted that the attack is in the same place where a previous sabotage had occurred in September of this year. In a televised appearance on Tuesday, President Maduro said that the Venezuelan attorney's office has already been provided with physical evidence that will determine the cause of the outage, and that an emergency system has been implemented to guarantee that similar events do not affect the course of the municipal elections on Sunday, December 8th. Maduro said that the huge blackout was an attempt to force him to declare a state of emergency and cancel the voting. This, he said, he would never do. Venezuela, with the largest oil reserves in the world, oh yes, the largest oil reserves in the world, and with a leading role in Latin American and Caribbean regional integration and development, thanks to the actions and initiatives of Bolivarian leader Hugo Chavez, is a major target for the U.S. Your tax dollars at work via the CIA. That's me, not Radio Havana, Cuba. They write, since Venezuela is a symbol of the disappearance of the old era in Latin America. Let's talk about the climate. A new report by the National Research Council looks at the social and ecological dangers that could lie ahead. This is from grist.com. From their intern, Amelia Uri. She writes, the report has a Hollywood-friendly two-part title, Abrupt Impacts of Climate Change, Anticipating Surprises. And like Hunger Games Catching Fire, this new release is also a sequel to the NRC's 2002 report of the same name, subtitled Inevitable Surprises. That's not the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, but the National Research Council. And what kinds of inevitable surprises should we be anticipating? She writes in the Worry About It Later column, we have some cinematic scenarios in which the Arctic belches up methane from the massive stores trapped beneath the ocean floor, or the heat circulation in the Atlantic stutters to a halt, soaking us in polar melt. Luckily, she writes, there is still lots of worry now to go around. One example of an abrupt change at hand is the biblical plague of mountain pine and spruce beetles ravaging North American forests, which has caused enough damage to no longer evergreens that swaths of dead trees can be seen from space. The beetles had previously been held in check by deadly cold snaps every few winters. Now, with just a small uptick in average temperatures, beetle populations are exploding. Bad news if you're not a conifer. Even if you're not a conifer, since forests sequester about a quarter of global carbon emissions, making the atmosphere nice and cool and breathable for the rest of us. And fortunately for us, I guess, we're having a cold snap. Will it kill beetles? I hope so. Other woes of the near future, she writes, may include polar sea ice already decreasing at an alarming rate. It could be taking a summer vacation, as it melted completely during the summer months in just a few decades. Melted ice means higher sea levels, which is a tipping point of another kind. Andrew Revkin of the Times blog .earth points out that Katrina's high waters just made it over the levee, and the difference between just over and not quite over proved to be lots of billions of dollars in human disruption. Extinctions are on the up and up as well, with biodiversity-rich ecosystems like coral reefs already under severe pressure from heat stress and acidification. And there's more to that at grist.com. Now, I'd like to invite your comments and calls, your questions, because I would like to talk about the climate and geoengineering. Because my prediction is that as soon as the New York subways flood well enough and often enough that rich people, I mean the really rich, the billionaires, realize that they can't get access to the people who swiftly bring them their beignets and massages, then there will be global engineering, and there won't be any stopping them unless we get rid of billionaires, which I think would be a great idea. And we can get rid of billionaires by being very kind to them and allowing them to have $10 million in a pat on the head to cry and tell, as I have said many, many times. Why do we have billionaires? Why is that a rational distribution of wealth? It most certainly is not rational. There's such a thing as the rest of society. There's such a thing as the 99.9%. Down with billionaires, I say. But anyway, I want to talk about the climate consensus blog on Guardian.com. It looks like past IPCC predictions of sea level rise, they write, were too conservative. Things are worse than we thought. That is the takeaway message from a new study out in Quaternary Science Reviews and from updates to the IPCC report itself. They rate the new study, which is also discussed in depth on Real Climate, I think that's .org, tries to determine what our sea levels will be in the future. What they found isn't pretty. Predicting of sea level rise is a challenging business. While we have good information about what has happened in the past, we still have trouble looking to the future, so what do we know? Well, it is clear that sea levels began to rise about 100 years ago. This rise coincided with increasing global temperatures. By the way, the number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Your comments on geoengineering. What causes sea level to rise? They write on The Guardian, really three things. First, water expands as it heats. Second, glaciers melt and water flows to the oceans. Third, the large ice caps on Greenland and Antarctica can melt and the liquid water enters the ocean. Often the water transfer is added by calving at the ice fronts, which results in icebergs that float into the ocean. In the past, much of the sea level rise was related to the first cause, thermal expansion. Now, however, more and more sea level rise is being caused by melting ice. That's a pretty long article, and you can find it at Guardian.com. Geoengineering, for it or against it, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, from SciDev.net. SciDev.net, that's SCIDEV.net. The plan B of using geoengineering to rescue humanity from the impact of climate change exists in a vacuum of international regulations, according to a recent review. Proposals to counteract the effects of global warming by engineering the planet with methods such as spraying chemicals into the atmosphere to block solar radiation are largely theoretical and lacking in research, but they prompt debate, with some scientists rejecting particular geoengineering proposals altogether, and others calling for developing nations to have a bigger say in any such plans. A recent report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, recognized that although there could be unintended consequences, geoengineering may have the potential to substantially offset a global temperature rise. Your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. We're talking about messing with the entire planet's climate. Of course, we already are messing with the entire planet's climate. And departing from that article, there are several methods that have been discussed, and they're all pretty crazy sounding. Some geoengineering actually has been attempted. For example, iron filings being put into the ocean to increase take up of carbon dioxide. And that was done off the shores of Canada, if I remember correctly. And it was a pretty small scale in terms of the globe, but it was an attempt to change the local climate. And there are other ideas. There are mechanical ideas that would just be, I think, improbable due to the scale. One of them is blasting water into the atmosphere from ships. The other is freezing carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and stuffing it somewhere like in the bottom of the ocean, where actually a lot of it is in the form of methane clathrates. Of course, that's not CO2 exactly, but it's all chemically related. It's carbon. And then there are ideas such as putting mirrors in space. I'm not even making this up. And there's also blasting sulfur into the atmosphere like a volcano, creating sort of artificial volcanoes. One of the drawbacks to all that sort of idea is that if you don't take the carbon out of the atmosphere simultaneously, if you don't stop pumping carbon into the atmosphere, then as soon as you stop engineering, or shortly thereafter, everything gets much worse very quickly. So once you started geoengineering, you'd have to keep doing it. So how many methods is that? And then there's the one that I have mentioned since contrails from aircraft. I did say contrails and not chemtrails, mind you. Chemtrails being a highly, well, it's just a chemtrail kind of a term. What can I say? Contrails in the atmosphere. It was discovered after the airline shut down on September 11th. Remember that? No airplanes allowed unless they were taking bin Laden family members, interestingly enough. Almost no aircraft whatsoever in the skies, and all of a sudden the climate changed. It changed measurably and substantially. And what happened was during the day, the ground heated up more. Ground temperatures were higher. At night, ground temperatures were lower. How did this happen? It happens because contrails reflect sunlight during the day. And they're much more efficient than you would guess. And they also hold in heat at night. Because what you see in a contrail is just part of it. You see the visible spectra. Those things spread out like mad. It's the nature of them. If you would like to see some really substantial contrail formation, then look at, you can now get online even color photography of World War II aircraft going off to bomb Germany. And they spread quite a bit of contrails, just a sort of ice mat behind them spreading. Very interesting phenomenon. So an easy way to change that ongoing geoengineering would be to ban contrail-producing flights at night. In other words, to have jet flights during the day, reflect sunlight, and just don't have them at night. And that way, the heat of the Earth can radiate out into space. That's what was happening there on September 12th, 13th, and 14th of 2001. Geoengineering, for it or against it, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Much more on that article at SciDev.net. But Greg has called in. What you got to say, Greg?
Hey, I'm not that thrilled about geoengineering because we're not certain about the results of it. I mean, maybe we'll have to resort to it when things are so bad that there's no other choices to make. But I would.
When you say we, who do you mean?
Well, I mean everyone who uses energy, basically. The whole, you know. So there's a free ebook you can read, carbon-free, nuclear-free. I don't know the author's name, but you can certainly search for it and find it pretty easily. He basically states that we have the technology, which will slowly be improved as time goes on, to become carbon-free and nuclear-free by 2050.
I can predict some pretty severe storms before 2050.
Oh, I don't doubt it. But, you know, it also some political willpower has to be applied here to make these things happen.
It's got
to
be done.
And the other side of things is that people don't, it's never, you know, sexy in terms of, energy is always conservation and not eating meat. I mean, those things help. We have a lot of old housing that needs a lot of insulation and energy upgrades. I mean, there's a lot of stuff we can do in terms of conservation.
What's the percentage? Do you happen to have memorized the percentage of energy loss that occurs as a result of long-range transmission?
I think it's only around, it's under 25%. I think it's like 15.
That's huge, though.
Yeah, it is. It's still a lot.
It's absolutely gigantic. And
it would make sense to have distributed energy generation, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that we could encourage, we, in this case, you and I right now, can encourage the formation of mini energy co-ops. In other words, the production of wind and solar energy by people who just know how to slap that sort of thing together for, let's say, 3 or 4 households who could go off the grid more or less.
Right. You got to understand that. I mean, let's face it, you just go on the other side of the Cascades and you got 300 days of sunshine, though, compared to the Willamette Valley. So, you know, there's always going to be locations that have a lot of an abundance of the resources that we're after. So you're always going to have some transmission, and it makes sense to use it where you have the resources. So, you know, there's a lot of trade-offs, a lot of costs. You just got to work it all out, and hopefully, I really think people should concentrate on the conservation side. I mean, houses can be made to require very little energy.
Okay, well, that's interesting, and I think that's worthwhile. I disagree slightly. I would say concentrating on the energy conservation. Well, I don't know. Maybe I don't disagree with that. But I want to add that we've got to destroy the political power of the energy companies. King Kong, coal, oil, nuclear, and gas. Down with King Kong.
Right. And it's very, you know, solar is very easy, actually. Very modular. And even our military wants to do solar. So, I mean, you can see where it makes sense for everybody, even the guys who shoot guns, you know. So, anyways, that's my 2 cents. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Fire a bullet for the climate.
Bye-bye.
In the Army. The time is 9:21. The number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Some scientists are rejecting particular geoengineering proposals altogether, and others are calling for developing nations to have a bigger say in any such plans. A recent report by the International Panel on Climate Change recognized, though, there may be unintended consequences. Geoengineering may have the potential to substantially offset a global temperature rise, and Mahindra is on the air. The number to call, 503-231-8187. Hello, Mahindra.
I can't believe that you would compare these trails from the jets with those old radial engine bombers. When they got back to base, they had no oil in them. Those contrails were distinctly different than the ones that we're seeing today.
I seriously doubt that.
No, it's 100% correct. If you burn JP4 at altitude, you're getting just water vapor and carbon dioxide. The carbon dioxide
and unburned hydrocarbons,
very, very trace amounts. That's not what's causing the spreading of these contrails, as you call them.
Okay, then what's causing the spreading?
Well, it's not just carbon dioxide and water, and it's not running through the
well. What is it then?
Either.
If you have the scientific answer,
barium.
You're a contrail nut.
Yeah,
and I'm
okay.
Putting you off the air.
You are
the number to call, 503-231-8187. Oh, yeah. I get fierce about that. If you want to talk about science, you had better be scientifically literate if you want to talk to me. And I'm going to hold that standard. And Thomas is on the air, 503-231-8187. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, Teresa. Yeah, big subject. Hey, you know what burns me up? Is all these continuing and ongoing scuttlings and sabotage of all of these alleged agreements to limit carbon by the big boy old-time polluters like United States, France, Canada, England.
That's a story. I mean, that really does need to be talked about. I mean, it's not just a matter of just not quite getting to an agreement. It's a matter of absolutely blocking any substantial change in what we're doing to the climate.
That's right. And think about the continual pretext, which is largely unchallenged in the media. Oh, China. Look, China's increasing its emissions at a rate. China's not going to, you know, do this. China. You know, in India, talking about these countries. Well, the per capita emissions of these countries is still a fraction of what the U.S. and European emissions are. And not only that, guess what? All of those big chuffing coal-fired power plants that are going to those factories, guess what those factories are largely making?
Funny
all
that.
All of the junk that's being sent back here. So in a very real way, that emissions is our emissions too. The second thing that amazes me is this whole geoengineering. You know, any kind of Dr. Strangelove, extremely large dollar.
Geoengineering. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, geoengineering. Anything, any crazy insane, outlandish scheme for using nuclear power plants to create giant jets of water into the atmosphere. Anything except for the obvious of pulling out the crack and pulling out the you know, the crack pipe of fossil fuels from the mouths. It's insane.
I think that's exactly it. That's why I keep talking about a political change first, a political awareness of the fact that we are being ruled by these multinational corporations and by billionaires.
Yep.
And secondly, let's take the power away from them.
Yep. We're beyond reformism. Let's go ahead and resist. Thanks, Teresa.
Thanks for calling. Number to call, 503-231-8187. There are things also that we are encouraged never to consider. One of them is commuting, which is absolutely insane if you think about it. Imagine that we lived close enough to walk to work, as people did 100 years ago out of necessity. And someone said, let's create a system which will destroy the planetary climate and claim 40,000 lives a year and injure another 100 or so thousand severely. And let's just live with that. And let's make everyone live off in areas where they have to live because it's cheaper than closer to where they actually work. And let's make them go back and forth every single day in dangerous vehicles that pollute the environment. What would people say if they actually had any vote on that? I think they would say, no, that's absolutely crazy. We're not going to go there. But why do we do it? And why do we accept it? It's not natural, normal, or necessary. It's commuting, and it's crazy. And the number to call, 503-231-8187, and Mike is on the air.
Hi, my name's Mike. I actually work at UPS, and I just got off work. I load trucks there. And I was actually thinking about this at work today, and I think that it's the end of the commodity economy is actually the only thing which serves any use here.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. The yuan is now taking the second role above the euro, and there is a tremendous bubble in the credit-based stock market at the moment. But go ahead with what you're going to say there.
No, I'm more thinking the billions and billions and billions of products which aren't needed, which are created constantly, and shipped constantly. This massive apparatus that is shipping and the internet, and all of those kinds of things. And I don't think the actual answer to here is actually feeling bad ourselves and cutting back on our consumption in any kind of like self-blame kind of way. And you talk about like green building and stuff like that. But you can see, I'm from Baltimore, and you can see the way which like green building plays out. It's destroying communities of color and putting in bougie condos. Like, that doesn't actually help anything.
You know what really kicks elite rule in the butt that you can do immediately? It's to look at someone close to you and hug them. It's to go next door and introduce yourself to your neighbors, because consumerism depends on this severe alienation that we've all gotten so used to.
Absolutely. But I think at the same time, we wonder, like, what's the answer to why do we commute to these jobs and such that we don't need, except for any other reason than men with guns will come and throw you out of your house if you don't pay some other guy who doesn't work a damn day of his life.
Yeah.
Like, this is, the question here is really obvious. And I mean, the answer to these questions, I think, is really obvious. And I don't think it has anything to do with this geoengineering or any of these various sciences. Maybe that will come later down the line, but...
Well, as I was saying, I think it'll come just as soon as really rich and powerful people are freaked out. And then they'll make geoengineering happening. They'll be able to do it because they're rich and powerful and we haven't cut back on their power.
I don't think that they will.
What would stop them?
I honestly just don't have even that much faith in them.
Okay, all right. Well, that could be. And, you know, actually, that'll have to be the last word because I've run out of my little time slot. And that means that Parafoggering is coming up next on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. So do stay tuned.
And good morning from KBOO Portland. 9:29 is the time. Coming up in a half hour here, Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, radio activist and Flashpoint senior producer Miguel Gavilan Molina tells his moving personal story of growing up in a farm worker family and experiencing racism. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Dan Johnson interviews Oregon writer Christopher Lord about his book, The Edwin Drood Murders, the second volume in the Dickens Junction mystery series that began with the Christmas Carol Murders. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the hosts share their favorite books of 2013. But first, it's Fight the Empire. Today, Per Fograng interviews Annie Machan. That's coming up next on KBOO.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the Worldbeat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife. Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fograng. And before we get to our guests, I got an announcement for fans of David Barsamian. He will be in, he will be speaking in Corvallis tonight. Tonight, December 5th, he will be in Corvallis at the Odd Fellows South Hall. And tomorrow night, Friday, December 6th, he will be in Salem at Willamette University in Cope Chapel. And both of those are at 7 p.m. So David Barsamian will be in your neighborhood. Okay, our guest today is Annie Machan. She was a former office intelligence officer with Britain's MI5, who back in the late 90s blew the whistle on all sorts of nefarious doings. She has written a book called Spies, Lies, and Whistleblowers. And she also has